Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the podcast that follows the money behind the beautiful game. I'm Kevin Day. I hope you had a lovely Christmas. I hope you're still having a lovely Christmas. It's not January the 6th for a long time. And I'm joined, of course, by Professor Kieran Maguire, who's an expert on football finance at Liverpool University. And before you say it, Kieran, legally, you are only a professor, as in a pub nickname.
That's good by me.
I know you get a bit antsy about being called the professor, but you are the prof from now on, as far as I'm concerned. You'd be welcome to drink in the Pawson's Arms with Neil the Fish, Mad Griff, Frank Talking, and all the other nicknames. I once went into a pub in Yorkshire with my cousin who lived up there, and he introduced me to his mate Donkey Head, who did have a very big head, and his mate Fireplace Jack, and it took me 2 hours to summon up the courage to ask him why he was called Fireplace Jack. And it turned out because he sells fireplaces. No, it was as mundane as that, basically. Anyway, coming up on this pod, Stoke City, Bet365, and the true cost of relegation from the Premier League, the price you pay for speaking your mind, and, you know about this, Kieran, so you won't be as excited, an exciting new change of format to tell everyone about.
Well, hey.
We'll keep that quiet for the moment, but I'm sure it's a money-making exercise by Guy, our producer. Hello, Guy. Who hasn't travelled down to London for this one, for some reason.
We're no longer in Soho Radio Studio.
We are no longer in Soho Radio Studio or the Comedy Store. We are in my house, in the background. That's how things are going. Apparently the pod's going very well, Guy tells us, and we're monetising it, but not so much that we don't have to do it in my house. And I know you're a bit sensitive today, as you copped a dodgy pheasant last night, didn't you?
That's right. Yeah, I went down the local pub, had a pheasant pie, and I've been paying for it ever since.
That's a very Brighton thing to do, isn't it? Pop down to who runs your local pub?
Well, Roger Daughtry is regularly down there.
There you go, Brighton. Now, Stoke. Now, this looks like a big subject percolating, doesn't it? But for Stoke, you could arguably substitute any of the clubs that have been relegated recently, but they've just posted a big loss for the second season running, haven't they?
That's right. Stoke have lost £86 million over the last 2 years, which is pretty big. And if you take that in consideration, first season they were in the Premier League. Second season, they're receiving £41 million in parachute payments. So what have Stoke tried to do? They've simply tried to buy themselves back into the Premier League by spending a fortune. So at the end of last season, they had a squad which cost £196 million, the most expensive squad ever assembled in the Championship, and they finished 16th.
Wow. And these were players left over from the Premier League or players that they brought in?
It was a combination. That they normally, when a club is relegated, as you've probably seen, they sell off all the best players and then they recruit sort of Championship standard players. Stoke went in, they signed Joe Allen, they signed some other players. So they spent over £80 million. They spent more money recruiting players in the Championship than they did in their final season in the Premier League, which is completely arse over tit.
Yes, that's a total lack of foresight as well, wasn't it? Our club still, I mean, it was happening so often it became a cliche, but so many clubs were going down, you know, 5-6 years ago, and they had so many of the players on contracts that guaranteed them Premier League wages on relegation, which even I know is not good economics. Have clubs stopped doing that now, or will players not sign if there's a thing in their contract that says their wages will go down?
It depends on how desperate the club is for the players. So many players do have relegation clauses in the contract. If you take a look at Stoke's wage bill last season, I estimate they were paying an average of £26,000 a week, which is by Championship standards, that's very high. You've got clubs such as Rotherham who are paying £3,500 a week. So they were certainly paying big bucks. And I think what they had done the previous season, some of the players who were in the Premier League who they were desperate to keep, either the reduction for relegation was relatively small or there wasn't one at all.
And it's noticeable as well this season in particular, the crowds have gone down, but according to your theory, that's not so much an issue, is it, in terms of income?
No, not if you're receiving parachute payments, as Stoke still are. They've got one more season after this one, and then they drop into the sort of the pit that is the Championship. So I think they're going to. I think that the concern is for them that financial fair play could be a big issue, but their chief executive. He's been making noises. He said, and I quote, "We're constrained by the rules that are in place. We don't like the rules. We think they're wrong and they're ill-conceived. We think they should be changed, but they're in place. We're doing everything we can to make them as favourable to us as possible." Now, why do you think he was saying that?
Which rules is he talking about? It's financial fair play.
Financial fair play in the Championship.
Why should they not apply to Stoke as well as every other team?
Well, Stoke City are owned by Bet365.
Yep.
And on the day that Stoke City announced their financial results, so did Bet365.
Oh, was that a coincidence?
Well, I suspect not. I think they wanted to show, actually, look this is what we can do. Bet365 last year took £65 billion in bets.
Billion?
Billion. So to give you some sort of context, the whole of the money that is paid into the NHS. The NHS annual budget is £115 billion. So Bet365 took over half of the amount of money that gets paid into the whole of the UK's NHS. It works out as £1,100 per person in the UK is going into Bet365 coffers. Now, clearly, yeah, plenty of bets are settled and they only, they have winners as well as losers, but that's just the size of the issue. And as a result of that, Bet365 have got billions of pounds sticking in the bank account, and they say, well, we're billionaires, so why can't we spend our money as we see fit? And therefore, financial fair play is not a problem.
Well, there's a logic to that, but it's not a logic that the other teams will... I'm still astonished by that amount of money. We talked on the previous pod about the fact that the Premier League, despite its global reach, was nowhere near as wealthy as Bet365, which is just one company. But I had no idea that Bet365... I can't have been paying attention when we talked about it in the previous pod, because that's an astonishing amount of money. But they don't own the club, though, do they?
They do own the club.
They do own it. So the guy who owns the club is also owns Bet365.
That's right. It's set up by the Coates family,
yeah,
who have been incredibly generous to the club.
And the community as well, has to be said.
That's right. Yeah. Peter Coates, yeah. He was one of 11 children. You know, if you look at his backstory, and it is a success story in terms of a business. Their chief executive is the highest paid person in the country. I think she took home £270 million herself last year.
Is she his daughter?
She's his daughter.
Yes.
And I guess part of you thinks, well, if they've made that money, they've got to do something with it. So they might as well give it to the owners. She's very philanthropic.
Yeah.
So is the money being reinvested? Yes, it is. But if billionaires' approach is going to be, well, the rules that apply to everybody else in the Championship don't apply to us because we're billionaires, then... Where does football ultimately go?
Well, yeah. So essentially, they're saying the financial fair play rules should only apply to people who can't afford to comply with the financial fair play rules. So the clubs that are less well off, who are trying all these crafty things that you've told us about to get round them, should become millionaires and then buy their way out of it, and that shouldn't be an issue, is what they're saying.
That's right. Effectively, they want it to be a sport, a bit like horse racing, where it's the money that counts. In terms of the wealth of the owners. And I think you and I, we're both from that background of 92 clubs who at the start of August still have got that romantic feeling,
especially
in the lower leagues,
yeah,
that you've got a chance of winning something. And I've been sort of, you know, I spend too much of my life on social media, but the comments that were coming from the fans of Sheffield Wednesday and Stoke, both of whom are owned by incredibly wealthy individuals, was that, well, we can't see a problem because we just happen to be owned by billionaires. But if it was Port Vale and Sheffield United who were the recipients of that money, then it would be different, you know, because it's the rivals. So it's a strange thing, and then there's the fans can become very defensive with regards to the nature, but surely we do live in some form of democracy, and just because somebody is a billionaire doesn't mean that the normal rules of engagement don't apply to them. If we've done, well, not at our university, but I've seen work done at university to see the different behaviours of wealthy people compared to people from a working class background. And what they did was that they, with a student, and this would drive the health and safety people mad. They walked across a pedestrian crossing as cars were approaching. They sort of put one foot onto the pedestrian crossing, and we had two people sitting by their side, and they were grading the cars. So if you had a Porsche or a Lamborghini, they put you down as category one. Mm. And then if there's little old ladies in a Nissan Micra, they were down at category four or five. And what they saw was that working class people or people from less wealthy backgrounds, they comply with the law. So 100% of the people from a poorer or a less well-off background, they stopped at the pedestrian crossing, whereas less than half of the people who were driving the Porsches and the Lamborghinis, they just went straight across. Mm-hmm. Because they've grown up in an environment where rules are something which can be circumvented, they can be bought, or they can be ignored. And I think that's the approach, that's certainly the vibes we're getting from some of these rich owners, which is why financial fair play is such a cat's cradle of a mess at present.
I can see by your body language, I'm going to have to interrupt this because we could be here for quite some time, with me agreeing with you, obviously. And I do remember talking to a Premier League footballer not that long ago who said without any sense of irony that there should be a millionaire's car lane, because if you've spent that amount of money on a car, you shouldn't have to be held up in traffic, basically. So that's the mentality you're talking about. But you might remember not long before the election, there was a bizarre argument on Five Live between Emma Barnett and John McDonnell, the low part about billionaires, with her arguing herself into a corner about saying we should be celebrating billionaires. It's a matter of interest. How many are there in the country?
That I don't know.
Right.
That's not my field.
Right, okay. That's the first question I've ever asked you don't know the answer to, so that's my belated Christmas gift. Because it would be a horrible, horrible world if every football club was owned by billionaires, wouldn't it?
Yes, because it's not part of our culture anymore. Yeah. It then just becomes a rich man's plaything. And if the rules aren't going to apply to them when it comes to driving, and the rules don't apply to them when it comes to football, where do we extend? If I'm down the pub and a bloke walks up to my wife and starts chatting her up, I'm not particularly pleased. If he says, hold it, I'm a billionaire, what am I supposed to say? Fill your boots, mate. What want me to do? Guide you in? It's absolutely disgraceful that people think that...
Guide you in, did you? Just...
Well, if things move on.
let's move on from that. But yeah. So the very high wages that Stoke were paying in the first year of relegation was presumably subsidised by the parachute payment, rather than... I'm trying to find a subtle way of saying, are there ways for Bet365 to actually pay the wages in a way that they shouldn't do?
There are, and what we are seeing is that some clubs are becoming increasingly cute with the way that they operate. So I'm aware of a Premier League footballer who was very talented as an academy player, and... You can't play academy players, so what happened was that the club's kit manufacturer, they got one of their subsidiary companies to employ the player's mum and dad, and that way they kept him on as part of the academy, and he's now knocking on the door of the first team. So there's always ways and means of getting around the rules.
It's a salutary lesson for other clubs, Stoke, or it should be, because for years when they were finishing 9th, 10th in the Premier League, they were held up as a model club, really, weren't they? As a club that kept within its means, didn't spend outrageous sums of money trying to get into Europe. So you kind of think, if this can happen to Stoke, regardless of their billionaire owners, this is something that can happen to virtually every club in the Premier League, can't it?
Very much. When relegation happens, it does hit clubs in a variety of ways. Some clubs really batten down the hatches. We think about Swansea and Huddersfield being relegated in the last couple of seasons. There's strange stuff going on in terms of ownership when clubs get relegated, and that makes it more of a challenge for the club manager, because he's got players there who don't want to be there and he won't necessarily want them to be there, but then the wages come into the equation and it does get very messy.
Just before we move on from stuff, this might seem an odd question, but it's one of the memories I have from Boxing Day. Boxing Day is always a blur to me, to be perfectly honest, although I remember IU's goal. I didn't quite know how to celebrate, really. The bloke next to me didn't even stand up. He's not going to score, is he? Somebody did ask me before the game, and we talked about the pod, which was nice, but basically, so how many ways of breaking financial fair play rules are there?
When the rules first came out, I sat down and I came up with a dozen.
Right, as many as that? So it's...
Yeah, I just thought the rules were crazy, and I'm thinking, well, hold on, you know, if I can do it and I'm just a teacher, then you've got lots of people at these big silver-tongued firms of accountants and law who will be able to go and drive a coach and horses through them. There are a lot of ways, right. Because what you're trying to do is to two things. A, how do you increase income? And B, how do you cut costs? And then you just go, well, there's things we can do with match day income. There's things we can do with sponsorship. There's, you know, as Paul Simon, you know, sort of once saying, there's 50 ways to leave your lover, etc.
Yeah, you're not just a teacher. And teacher's not as good a nickname as professor. Because most of us, when we talk about financial fair play, and this is one of the reasons why I think this pod is being so successful, is because people like me, you just associate, you go, it's something to do with wages, essentially. And that's what most people associate it with, that it's a way of getting around huge wage bills, isn't it?
Yes, and in League One and League Two, there is a wage cap. There was a wage cap in the Premier League. That was scrapped this summer. And on Boxing Day, just to show that I do work 365 days a year, the Chinese Super League, they've just announced a wage cap in China, which limits wages to £49,000 a week net. Which will have an issue in terms of them recruiting the likes of Hulk and Oscar and so on in future years.
Why have they done that, as a matter of interest? Because you'd imagine if any country, and by coincidence we were about to talk about China next, but you'd imagine if any country didn't need to do that, it would be China.
Well, I think the Chinese government has seen that there's been conspicuous consumption, I think is the way of describing it. You've got footballers coming in with the Lamborghinis, with the designer clothes and so on, and they don't feel that that sets a particularly good example to the fan base. But also, the Chinese clubs, on an individual basis, they're losing fortunes because they're trying to outdo each other in acquiring these marquee signings.
Is there a limit to how many foreign players they can have?
I think it's presently 5, and I think that's going to drop to 4 because China is very keen to host the World Cup.
Yes.
And part of the reason behind that is that by having overseas players who are very talented, it can increase the quality of the coaching and also the overall standards of the teams within the CSL.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
So we saw an issue with China, with Mesut Ozil, just a couple of weeks ago when, in a fit of umbrage, the Chinese broadcasting refused to show an Arsenal game because of comments he made about ethnic Muslim communities there. Is this the sort of thin end of the wedge? Does this mean that clubs will be desperately begging their players not to mention anything related to politics, especially in China? And off the back of that, and it's a question people have been asking, if a fan, for example, you or I, were to tweet our dismay at some of the practices towards ethnic minorities in China, would they take umbrage at that? Are we being held hostage by a very, very rich country?
Well, I mean, from the Chinese government's point of view, that they've paying £564 million for 3 years of broadcasting rights from the Premier League, and they want something in return from that. Clearly, they want their people to be able to watch those matches, but they feel that if they're paying that amount of money, then why should they be criticised? And I think there's a danger of falling into political point scoring and whataboutery. If you look at Mesut Ozil, who was the best man at his wedding? It was Erdogan, who is a fairly authoritarian dude himself.
And then
do you go and say, well, hold on, Mesut, you know, you're criticizing what's happening in China, but what's happening with regards to the Kurds? What's happening in Syria as a result of... And then everybody piles in because Mike Pompeo, who's the US Secretary of State, he's now decided to align himself with Mesut Ozil because, guess what? America's got a trade dispute with China. Yeah. So you end up with geopolitics. We do go along to watch matches, you know, to forget about the politics and many of the more harsh things of life. And if this is bringing it back into that domain, the clubs will certainly want to distance themselves. Arsenal's match on Boxing Day, the Chinese state TV company relinquished the ban on showing Arsenal matches. But when Arsenal played on Boxing Day, Mesut Ozil's name was not mentioned once during the commentary.
Right.
Now, we've all seen matches where he disappears, but this one, he just did not exist for 90 minutes. You know? Yeah. So there's clearly issues here. And I think from his career's point of view, if he's thinking of moving to another club, most clubs within Europe wouldn't now want to touch him, because if they've got Chinese sponsors or commercial partners, they would be upset by the move. The only place realistically he could move to would be Turkey, where he's being fated as a hero. So again, we're getting into the world of politics and sport. Should they mix or shouldn't they?
Yeah, the politics thing is well made, because I remember a lot of left-wing comedians tying themselves into knots about whether they could watch Sky, basically, because of the Murdoch connection. So, and it goes back to our initial conversation. Billionaires don't get to be billionaires without making some harsh decisions and presumably bankrupting some other people. I'm not saying that happened with Bet365. So if you dig deep enough, you'll find a reason not to support any club, basically, or to support any government. Now, I mentioned slightly jokingly, which is some of the reviews I've been getting for my contribution to this pod, slightly jokingly, what would happen if a fan were to, you know, to get involved and say what Mesut Ozil did. Normally that would be through social media, but I mean, do you think the likes, is it too paranoid to suggest that the Chinese state broadcasting companies or the Chinese government are monitoring tweets? And if, for example, Arsenal fans tweeted their support for Mesut Ozil, that would be considered bad as well? Or if, you know, because, you know, fans are more and more politicised these days, if I were to tweet something, do you think that would get Palace into trouble?
Well, if it was racist or homophobic or broke any of our laws,
obviously,
hope it gets reported to the authorities.
Which, unfortunately, so many football-related tweets are. For all that I've said, we're getting politicised. There's still a lot of numpties out there.
But potentially, yes. So here's an example. This is a tweet from a fan of a Premier League club. His club had just lost a match, so therefore, we say always think before posting. But this one was, here it is, genuine question. Gary Lineker won't ask it, though. How many Arabs have died to pay for that win? #MCFC.
Whoa.
So what this fan was doing, he was making reference to, you know, allegations of human rights issues and the kafala employment system in the UAE, where migrant workers' visas are effectively sponsored by the employer, and is that a form of slavery? So
it doesn't bother FIFA, does it, when it comes to building stadiums for the World Cup? But
absolutely. So the opposition club to Manchester City, they picked up on this.
So
they
the club the fans supported, in other words.
That's right.
Yes.
And they asked him to delete it, and then they gave him a 5-year ban from attending home matches.
Really?
Yep. And that
did. So Man City didn't complain?
I think Manchester. We don't know.
Right.
It could have been that it was just after the match. You know, the board of directors were in the room, and something comes from the opposition team. You're going through, and somebody in the social media department says, look what your fans are saying here. Now, you know, I think there's been an appeal. I think it's been reduced to 1 year, is my understanding. And the Football Supporters Association, that they're trying to get this dealt with on behalf of the fan, because it does seem an unusual comment to make. It wasn't racist. It wasn't homophobic.
It was on the nose, but it was politically astute, and that's censorship. I mean, the club can't ban him for having an opinion.
I think the words used by the club was that the comment besmirched the reputation of the club.
Unless he has the club's name in question, and when there's a reason we're sort of dancing around who the club is, because we don't want similar issues. Unfortunately, it sounds a bit cowardly, but there are legal issues. We've been advised that we should be very careful here. But that's unless the guy has, you know, the club's name in his Twitter handle. I can't see.
Well, he does. So he was very clear that right. Which team he supports.
Oh, okay. So it could be seen as an official club tweet.
Well, it could be, but if somebody from Palace 1984 tweets something derogatory about an opponent's team after a match, and also if you look, I live in Manchester, I work in Liverpool, the stuff that comes out from there, because they absolutely hate each other.
Well, if clubs were going to be consistent about this, you'd be knocking 20,000 off at the home attendance every week for every club, because the air is full of hatred and bile to it. And if you'd like to think, if clubs are going to take things that seriously, they should be doing it with racist, homophobic tweets as well, which they tend not to be banned. You know, they're not getting involved in investigating who these mysterious people are that send these tweets anonymously. So it is of some concern, essentially, isn't it? So that's one we need to follow, and I think we probably need to talk to the FSA as well, because that's a disturbing precedent.
It is. I mean, if that is, and ultimately, a club can choose who can go and attend matches there.
Yes,
but if they're going to ban me or you or anybody else because of their views on human rights or politics, then, as you say, we could be knocking an awful lot of fans off the approved list. And there is a view that the gentrification of the game since the beginning of the Premier League has perhaps gone too far. And is this an example of such a policy?
It's a difficult one for Man City fans as well, as I know a lot of Man City fans. Certainly gay Man City fans in particular are very uneasy about the relationship of the UEFA to the club, knowing what the laws are out there. So this is an interesting one to follow, because you simply can't stifle opinion like that. I mean, not if it's not when it's put that articulately, and it is, again, we have to acknowledge it's an on the nose comment, but it's essentially true. And we don't like the idea that every club will start policing the Twitter handles of every club supporters just to take offence and take umbrage.
That's right. I agree with you entirely.
But someone else closer to home. A club director who called fans unbelievably... what was the actual phrase?
Unbelievably uneducated.
Yes. He's quietly disappeared as well, hasn't he? So tell us the background to this story.
Well, this relates to Sunderland. Sunderland were bought out about 18 months ago by Stuart Donald, and there's a minority shareholder, a guy called Charlie Methven. And Sunderland, the initial relationship between these two guys and the fan base was incredibly close, because they said, well, we're not Americans, we want you to get back into the Championship.
Yeah.
Then things haven't worked out quite as planned. So clearly that they weren't promoted last season. Presently, I think are they 16th in League One,
yeah,
the lowest per position in the club history. And I think in November, they got a strange loan from an American company called FPP of £10 million. And looking at the small print, and I've not seen every part of this, it appears to suggest that if Sunderland failed to make the loan repayments, these American lenders can actually take over the Stadium of Light.
Oh.
It's a bit like a mortgage. If you don't make your repayments, we'll repossess your house. So I think Sunderland fans sort of brought this to the attention of the club, and this provoked the reaction from Charlie Methven. I was at a gathering a week and a half ago, where there were some Sunderland fans, and they were very angry about this. Charlie Methven then mysteriously resigned as a director, saying, I want to spend more time with my family, which is sort of code for, as we've seen many politicians, yeah, when they've been caught with their trousers down, I need to get
Christmas,
out of town.
Christmas was coming up. He may have wanted to spend more time with his family.
Absolutely.
It's a shame for Sunderland fans, though, because they had, I mean, they had some happy times in the Premier League, but under Ellis Short, they had some very miserable times as well, didn't they? So it's kind of a shame this is going pear-shaped for them, because every football fan would say we deserve their day in the sun, but yeah, they're looking at Newcastle doing relatively well, and it's not a happy time for them, is it?
That's right, and that's that funny relationship that clubs do have, or club owners do have, with the fan base. Ellis Short effectively wrote off £100 million when he walked out of town.
Yeah.
It didn't work out, and if you take a look at Sunderland, you know, the way that they burnt through chief executives with huge payoffs, clearly there was the Adam Johnson affair as well, which was absolutely tainted their memory, their sort of position within the football fan base. They've had a lot of bad news over the course of the last decade. But yeah, as a fan that's been to both Roker Park and the Stadium of Light, it's one of the places you love going to.
It's one of the friendliest clubs I've ever been to, as a Palace fan, oddly, and as a broadcaster. Certainly when Niall Quinn was about, and it probably came from him, but they were a club you always look forward to going to see, which is one of the reasons I'm very sad to see them in this situation. Now, normally, Kieran, we would finish the pod with questions, but that's not happening. And there's a good reason for that, because we are going to be doing two episodes a week from now on. I'm sure there's a reason for this.
I'm sure there is as well.
There is a reason for this. It's because we're a victim of our own success, is what it is, Kieran, basically. And we need to give more space to questions, essentially. So we're going to two episodes a week. So every Thursday, it's just going to be you and I chatting and you giving us your analysis. And on every Monday, we'll have a slightly shorter pod when we ask your questions, starting from next Monday. West Ham and Partick Thistle fans, I think, will particularly want to listen to that. And if you've got questions for us, get them into questions@priceoffootball.com. Price of Football is a Dap Dip production. Please review us on wherever you listen, because that helps with the algorithms as well, apparently. And again, Guy getting money, I imagine. So until then, have a good weekend.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.